That's voanews.com.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. And happy Friday. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the January 14th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. It's day six at the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Cameroon. Heading into Friday's matches, there have been a total of 18 goals scored in 14 games. Four of those goals have come from Vincent Aboubakar, Cameroon's team captain and currently the competition's top scorer. Aboubakar scored two goals Thursday as host Cameroon beat Ethiopia 4-1 in Yaoundé to become the first team to advance to the round of 16. And here are a few Nations Cup facts about Cameroon's captain, Vincent Aboubakar. He'll celebrate his 30th birthday on January 22nd. Vincent has represented Cameroon at three Nations Cup tournaments. At the 2017 Nations Cup in Gabon, Aboubakar scored the winning goal in the 88th minute as Cameroon beat Egypt 2-1 in the final. It was Cameroon's fifth Nations Cup trophy. Only the Egyptians, with seven African titles, have won more. Joining us once again from Cameroon with another spicy Nations Cup update is Samson Omale. Sporty Nations Cup greetings, Samson.
Sporty Nations Cup greetings to you, Sunny, from outside the media center of the Garoua Stadium. We begin the latest African update with day five results as Cameroon hammered Ethiopia 4-1 in their second Group A match at the Stade Olimbé on Thursday evening in the ongoing African Cup of Nations. The win saw the Indomitable Lions, who are placed at the top of the group standings, become the first team to reach the knockout phase of this year's tournament after producing a brilliant second-half performance, while the Walia Ibex, as the Ethiopians are widely known, remained fourth on the table. Gara, where the captain of the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon, Victor Aboubakar, comes from, was in celebration mood all night on Thursday. Some Cameroonian fans to tell me what the victory meant to them, and this is what they had to say.
The first time I thought that our heart would just break down when the Egyptian first gave the goal. And finally, when we equalized, just I said that no, there's still hope. And the second goal, the third and the fourth, are just wonderful, just great. Say no, Cameroon, we are Cameroon, we are proud to be Cameroon. I love Cameroon.
Very happy because the Cameroon win today. I am very well because all Cameroon is... I celebrated this celebration for the win. Beat Ethiopia.
So tell me, why are you people happy today?
Everybody, every Cameroonian is very, very happy. So particularly in the people in Kawa, in particular Rumde Ajia, we are very, very happy. You have seen everybody is very happy.
Widely considered to be the underdogs, the Ethiopians took a surprise lead just 4 minutes into the match as Dawa Hotessa fired past goalkeeper Andre Onana to make it 1-0, turning home a lovely cross from the right, which was delivered by Emmanuel Gabriel-Michael in the second Group A game. Burkina Faso's Hassan Bandi chested home the ball 6 minutes before halftime to give the Stallions a 1-0 win over the Cape Verde Islands. The Stallions, who lost their opening match to host Cameroon, came into the West African
Derby without captain Bertrand Traoré, who tested positive for COVID-19. The win by Burkina Faso leaves Group A wide open ahead of the final round of group stage games. Elsewhere, Gabon's Mario Limena and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang returned to training on Thursday following the end of their COVID-19 quarantine ahead of their second game against Ghana in Yaoundé on Friday in the late kickoff. Yuana Obiang, Gabonese defender, says they are excited to have their captain back.
We are very happy to have our captain back. We know the impact he has on the group, the impact he brings during the games, and the pressure he can put on our opponent's defense. So we're very happy. We know that this AFCON is complicated. We need everyone, our best assets, and his return will definitely give us a boost for this game.
Aubameyang's side will be led by assistant coach after their head coach Patrice Neveu tested positive for COVID-19. Away from the matches now, the Confederation of African Football has dismissed Tunisia's protest to their African Cup of Nations Group F game against Mali. Tunisia had lodged an appeal against the 1-0 result after the game ended prematurely. The North Africans were pushing for an equalizer against the West Africans, who had a man sent off as the game wound down. The game's center referee, Jani Sikazwe, has been a major talking point since that game for controversial decisions, including ending the game twice before the official 90 minutes normal time lapsed. Sikazwe initially blew his whistle to indicate the end of the match in the 85th minute before he allowed play to continue. He again blew his whistle to end the game before the 90th minute, sparking protests from Tunisian players and technical bench. Now joining me on the sunny side of sport from outside the media center of the Garo Stadium is a Cameroonian journalist as we look at the victory of the Indomitable Lions on Thursday, alongside CAF's decision regarding the Tunisians' appeal.
I am Ajo John Ashu. I'm a sports editor for the CRTV Cameroon Radio Television. I'm a match commentator for this AFCON.
Yesterday, Cameroon, way up to this morning, was in a jubilant mood because obviously the Indomitable Lions took the games to the Ethiopians, won 4-1 on the night. What do you make of that game generally?
In fact, it was a match in which the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon had, first of all, to reconcile themselves with their public. We should understand that they won the first game against Burkina Faso by 2-1. And, you know, people usually consider penalties as probably their goals anywhere. But they don't see the efforts of the players. And to be very honest with you, people's expectations per what the Indomitable Lions could produce in the first encounter were still short of expectations. And so the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon had to use Ethiopia to reconcile themselves with the public and also to give assurance that Cameroonians can expect something from them. And the fact that Cameroon took the first goal within 5 minutes, some sort of gave comfort to prophets of doom. But we saw the Lions react as the true Lions they are, not only by beating Ethiopia, but beating Ethiopia woefully by 4-1. And we could understand the euphoria that followed this victory and the high expectations that Cameroonians nurture as concerns the continuation of the Lions in the tournament.
Will you see, judging by yesterday's performance, that Cameroon has positioned itself to be one of the major contenders for this tournament?
Obviously, yes, because it's true that Ethiopia may not be the litmus test that the Indomitable Lions had to pass to get to the A finals. But with this performance, and especially with the zeal that it has awoken in the players, we are very, very confident that the Indomitable Lions have positioned themselves as the favorites for the crown in this tournament.
Okay, let's look at some other things around the tournament quickly. Yesterday, the Confederation of African Football threw out the protest of Tunisia, which it lodged following, you know, the incident with the referee. What do you make of that decision by CAF going forward?
It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but one would have also understood CAF because the referee made an error quite. He could make amends, which he wanted to, by calling both sides to come back to the field of play. The opponent, Mali, responded positively, but Ethiopia stayed away. Tunisia stayed away. And I believe the premise on which CAF has taken that decision should be the refusal of Tunisia to comply, because it is granted that administrative sanctions may follow for the referee. But for the squads, they were supposed to come back and complete the time that they had before the end of the encounter. So I think that is also a side attraction. And it's unfortunate that in a tournament like this, a referee should commit such a blunder. One would not probably understand the psychological state in which he was when he was handling that encounter. But I think those are issues that CAF also has to look into.
Okay. You are a Cameroonian. You are a journalist. Can you give us some insight into why the stadium is really scanty? Most of the stadium around, you know, the venues, we're not seeing. Yeah, we know there are all the restrictions and all that, but if CAF has said 60% of the stadium can be filled, we're not even seeing close to 10% in most of the stadia.
It's unfortunate and baffling for us reporters in Cameroon to realize that in spite of all measures that have been taken to facilitate access into the stadia, people are still reluctant.
And that will be all from me here on the Sunny Side of Sport from outside the media center of the Garua Stadium. It's back to you, Sunny.
Thanks, Samson. That's Samson O'Male reporting from Cameroon with another extra spicy package of Africa Cup of Nations football news.
Hello, Jonathan Mensah here, Black Stars defender and Columbus Crew captain. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
Jonathan Mensah and the Black Stars of Ghana will go against the Panthers of Gabon in Friday's last match at the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Cameroon. Ghana lost its opening Nations Cup match to Morocco 1-0, while Gabon defeated Comoros by that same 1-0 scoreline. Ghana Football Association President Kurt Okraku says he's optimistic the young Black Stars team can bounce back against the Gabonese.
We came here to be competitive. We came here to truly represent our dear country. And we came here to make ourselves proud. And we knew that we had to play three games to make it to the next level. Okay? We played a very tough game against Morocco. I thought we were very structured, we're very disciplined. Unfortunately, I mean, that ball found its way into the net. But the team has recovered ever since. Training sessions has been very, very good. I mean, you saw today's training sessions, which sends a clear signal about the readiness of the boys to come back to winning ways. And I'm extremely positive about our game against the Gabonese on Friday. I think that the boys have recovered well. They'll be very, very competitive. And I respectfully ask Ghanaians to throw our support behind the squad. This is a team that is made up of predominantly young players. We have 17 debutants at the AFCON. And that tells you clearly that the future of our national team is very, very bright.
We just heard the Ghana Football Association president say his predominantly young squad is made up of 17 players who are making their Nations Cup debuts in Cameroon. One of those players is Fatou Ishaku, who came on as a late substitute in that loss to Morocco. Joining us now from Accra with a feature profile on the 17-year-old Fatou is Yao Afusu Larbi. Sporty greetings, Yao!
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Fatou Ishaku's reputation precedes him. Goals, assists, and a sweet left foot. He has become the most exciting youngster the country has seen in recent years. Before he played at the Under-20 Africa Cup of Nations and won with the Black Satellites, he had already captained the Black Starlets at the WAFU Under-17 tournament and had gained remarkable grounds in Ghana's Division 1 league. Let's roll back the years a bit. Fatou grew up in Nigeria for a little while before his family relocated to Tamale, the capital of the northern region.
Fatou Ishaku grew up in the house behind me. On the streets, he played football when he was young, before he made it to the big leagues. His mom tells me he started very early in his incredibly young life, and his tough home training and strong religious beliefs are what have kept him on the straight and narrow.
Blessed with a blend of technique, vision and power, Fatau rose quickly. Despite his obligations at home, he would eventually take to organized football very easily. The young midfielder was a member of the Tamale Utrecht coach ranks and was under the watchful eye of the club's overseer, Aboud Moro. But after failed attempts, botched moves overseas, and the loss of trust in the system, he moved to join Steadfast Football Club, where the stars began to align.
On this patchy grass field in the heart of Tamale, he learned to hone his skills with the Steadfast Football Club. Much of what he knows now, he learned under the able tutelage of former Ghana star Mohamed Gago.
Many years have passed since Gago wowed Ghanaian football fans on the pitch. A fair bit of Ghanaians, old and young, know who he is and give him the deserved respect. These days, he stands on the sidelines, watching his team play. He stands quietly, hands behind his back, looking on pensively and thinking through several tactical tweaks. It is through his system that Fatau Ishahaku got national recognition. Fatau's flair and willingness to express himself was a dose of colour in Steadfast Doris times. Gago himself started as a young lad, and he sees a bit of himself in the young Ishahaku.
Fatau is an exceptional player. He's a God-given talent that he has. You see Fatau play, and you remind yourself I was lucky to be there to watch Abedi Pele when he was still with Real Tamale United, when I was a coach team player growing up, until I caught up with them a little bit before he left. I mean, you see the replica of Abedi Pele in Fatau. His touches, his movements, the speed, the passing, the awareness, ability of holding on to the ball and doing whatever he wants to do with the ball. I mean, you can see that in Fatau. My only wish is to see Fatau become the next Ballon d'Or player of Africa.
Aside from the football, what kind of person is he?
Well, Fatau is a very, very sociable kind of a guy. I mean, he brings out the excitement in our camp. He plays around, and he's an easygoing kind of a guy that I know. And to talk of respect, he's someone that is down to earth. And he's coming, I believe, and I know, I personally know his father, and I know he's coming from a very, very humble background.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Yao Fusulabi in Accra.
Thanks, Yao. Cameroonian authorities say Anglophone separatists have been trying to disrupt the Nations Cup. The military says rebels have launched small-scale attacks in the towns of Boya and Limbe, which are staging matches. Authorities have also blamed the separatists for the killing of a Cameroonian lawmaker this week. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from the capital, Yaoundé.
Armed men shoot indiscriminately in the air while ordering about 15 children dressed in school uniforms to strip naked. The audio is extracted from a video shared by Cameroon separatist fighters on social media platforms, including WhatsApp and Facebook. In the video, two armed men are seen brandishing weapons and threatening to kill any student who attempts to disobey the fighters' orders. Other voices are heard ordering the students to lie down or be killed. The students plead for their lives to be spared. Cameroon's Secondary Education Ministry Friday said the incident happened Thursday near Government High School Boya. Boya is a town in Cameroon's English-speaking southwest region. The ministry says 15 students were on their way to school when separatist fighters stopped and assaulted them. None of the students was injured, but their school has been closed since Thursday, the government said. The military acknowledged Thursday's attack on students. In a release read over Cameroon State Radio, CRTV, Military spokesperson Colonel Cyril Serge Atongfak Gemo blames separatists for the attack. Anglophone separatists fighting in Cameroon's western regions to break away from the majority French-speaking nation have vowed to disrupt the continent's top soccer tournament in Boya and Limbe. Boya and Limbe are hosting football fans, players and match officials for group matches for teams from Gambia, Mali, Mauritania and Tunisia. The military says it has been in running battles with fighters since the tournament began Sunday. 21-year-old University of Boya student Clementine Yaji says many people have been wounded in heavy gunfire and shooting in the outskirts of Boya. He spoke via a messaging app from Boya.
People have been shot, some wounded. We've been scared because of those gunshots. It's really tense here, and students can't study under such tense environment. So we are pleading on the government to try and see how to resolve this issue in Boya.
The Cameroon military says the separatists have increased attempts to infiltrate Boya and Limbe. The military says separatists are frustrated over their inability to disrupt matches of the Africa Football Cup of Nations. Capo Daniel is deputy defense chief of the Ambazonia Defense Forces, a rebel group in Cameroon's western regions. He says at least three government troops have died in battles with fighters within a week.
One Cameroon military man died on that attack. Two others later died in the hospital, bringing a total of three Cameroon casualties during this football tournament. We have also destroyed one armored personnel carrier of the Cameroon military. In addition to this, a Cameroon government school was closed down.
The military says none of its troops died and none of its equipment was destroyed. Civilians say they saw government troops evacuating the corpse of their colleague after heavy gun battles in Motengene, a town near Boya. The military says it has killed several fighters around Limbe and Boya, but gives no details. The military also blames separatists for Tuesday's killing of an influential lawyer and opposition member of the Senate, the upper house of parliament. Nobody has claimed responsibility for Tuesday's killing of Henry Kemende in Bamenda, an English-speaking northwestern town. Cameroon's government and the military this week said attacks have increased in English-speaking western regions since the tournament started, but that English-speaking towns hosting it are safe. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
For a second time, Australia has canceled the visa of world number one tennis player Novak Djokovic. Phil Mercer reports from Melbourne, Australia.
Australia Immigration Minister Alex Hawke said he'd cancelled Djokovic's visa on health and good order grounds on the basis that it was in the public interest to do so. He said his decision had been made after careful consideration of information provided by the Department of Home Affairs, the Australian Border Force and Mr. Djokovic. The tennis star had been granted a medical exemption from COVID-19 vaccination rules by two independent health panels organised by Australian tennis authorities and the Victoria State Government. However, he was detained when he arrived at Melbourne Airport January 5 by Australian Border Force officials. The cancellation of his visa was overturned by a federal court judge Monday. However, his visa has now been revoked for a second time. This tennis fan in Melbourne believes it was the right decision.
Oh, look, I think it's for the best. The more you think about it, the tensions that would have been there, the booing from the crowd, the passion of fans on his side, I just think we could potentially be asking for trouble, personally. Unfortunate as the whole saga is, I think it's the right decision and we can hopefully move on.
Djokovic said he'd contracted coronavirus last month, which gave him the right to apply for a medical exemption. However, Australian border authorities had said that the tennis star had not met immigration regulations. Djokovic has won the Australian Open title nine times. Had he triumphed at this year's tournament, he would have become the most successful men's Grand Slam champion with 21 titles. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Melbourne.
Thanks, Phil. Let's stay in Melbourne. That's where Spanish great Rafael Nadal has shared a few tennis lessons with some young players. Joining us now with more details is VOA's Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Some young athletes in Australia received a rare treat at Melbourne Park on Thursday. They were paid a visit by former world number one tennis great Rafael Nadal as he prepares for next week's Australian Open tournament. Nadal met with a group of 12 to 15-year-olds who had earned a spot at the Rafa Nadal Tour, an event that returned to Australia to educate junior tennis players within a competitive environment. During the question and answer session, Nadal passed along some words of wisdom from his nearly two decades of professional experience and shared the most important aspect of his success.
I think I did one very important and positive thing when I was a kid and still today is listen, you know, listen and be ready to follow the instructions of the people next to me. You know, at the age of 13, I have been practicing a lot and with very high intensity, sometimes even too much, but I think I have zero to complain about my attitude during all that years. No, probably that's why I had a very successful career lately.
The world number six also displayed his technique on the court during a practice session. 13-year-old Elliot and 12-year-old Brooke were there to watch and said they not only admire Nadal's skills, they're inspired by them.
His focus and determination, I think, are amazing. And just being able to sit over there and just watch him on court, you really get the amplified effect of just looking at how he does that so well.
Yeah, it inspires me a whole nother level. Like, it just makes me want to just try even harder every time I step on the court. And it just makes me feel like I want to be more like him.
Nadal has often been cited as the perfect role model due in part to his humility, strong work ethic, and impressive resume. He is returning to competition after a nearly four-month absence due to a foot injury. And last weekend, Nadal showed the world he's back after winning the men's singles title at the Melbourne Somerset One tournament. He's now on course to surpass his record of 20 Grand Slam titles, a feat he shares with Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic. Nadal is set to start his Australian Open campaign against American Marcos Giron on Sunday. As you heard earlier in the show, Novak Djokovic has had his visa revoked for a second time by Australian authorities, putting any hopes of defending his Australian Open title in jeopardy. The world number one is now faced with the possibility of deportation that could result in a three-year ban from returning to Australia. Djokovic is scheduled to meet with immigration officials on Saturday and is expected to appeal this latest decision. On the women's side, home favorite and world number one Australian Ashley Barty is vying for her first Australian Open title to add to the trophy she won at the 2019 French Open and 2021 Wimbledon tournaments. She plays her first round match against Ukrainian Lesia Sorenko on Sunday, but Barty faces a tough draw with a potential clash against defending women's champion Naomi Osaka in the round of 16. Osaka took some time off from the sport after last year's U.S. Open to address ongoing mental health issues, but she's back in action in Melbourne and will begin her title defense against Colombia's Camila Osorio in their opening round match on Sunday. And that is all from me for today and for the week. I'll hand it back over to you, Sonny. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. And you have a good weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. And And that wraps up the January 14th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in, and have a nice weekend.
I get it.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.